Hey, welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping podcast. This is episode number 4. We are really excited. I'm your host, Greg Lehman. I'm here with my beautiful wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. I didn't hear from anybody about what, if they know what hello, hello means last week.
Let's get into it.
So what are we up to?
Well, I guess we should tell people what we're going to talk about.
I guess they can read that in like the notes or something, right?
Cool. Let's do it.
Yeah. Otherwise, go in blind. Just do it. Kara's one of those people. You would be you're the person that like jumps off the cliff first, right?
Always. Yeah. I mean, not anymore, but like, yeah, I did that way too many times.
Yeah. Now, did you do that because you were like trying to be tough or was you kind of like...
I was an idiot. That's why.
Because I'm the person that's like, yeah, you should jump.
No, I mean, I've told you this story, but I'll tell it again real quick. We went to a trellis, which is like a trellis bridge, like trains drive.
Who's we?
My friends and I when I was in high school. Okay. And we were going to go cliff jumping, and we went cliff jumping so many times. And this was so high. And my friends brought us there, my one friend, and they were like, everybody was standing on the edge, and I was just like... I think I thought that they had been there before and they jumped off before. And I was like, everyone's like looking and I was like, yeah, I'll go. And I just jumped. And then it was so high. Like when your bathing suit like goes up your butt crack and it just like hurts so bad.
Yeah. Heard that.
And I don't know if that happens to boys.
Never mind.
And then I realized
we have to like cover our junk when we jump from a high point, and if you spread your legs at all,
no. So it wasn't until years later,
been there,
like a couple years ago, when I'm 39. So this was like a revelation that came too long after this happened.
You're 39?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And so
I didn't think you were day over 38.
I was telling my students a story. I don't even know why. And then all of a sudden, I'm telling them this, and I'm like, I didn't know how deep that water is. Did anybody, like, I was the first one. I could have died.
Yeah, I mean, we all need, like, the first ones, though. I mean,
it's nuts.
Like, who's the first person to eat, like, an oyster?
Well, everybody looked down, they're like, you're okay? I'm like, yeah, come on down.
Did anybody not jump at all?
No, I think everybody
jumped. We used to go to this cliff jumping spot that we jumped off on the, I think it was still the Delaware side of the Susquehanna. Might have been the Maryland side, but we used to jump off this cliff, and it'd be like a big group of us would go. And this was, I think the first time I did it was maybe 7th grade, 8th grade. There were different levels. I think the first level was like 20 feet, which doesn't sound like it's that high, but like 20 feet's still pretty high. And then the top one, you had to like climb out on this little cliff and like hold onto a tree, and it was probably like 60 feet. But there, every time we went, somebody would not jump off the 20 foot even.
Yeah, I mean, I bet. They were probably smarter than me.
Anyway, I don't know how we got into that.
We're jumping off the cliff. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's jump off the cliff. So what are we up to right now? Dude, bee venom therapy.
Yeah.
I'm still hard on this. It's hard on this?
I don't know that's the right term still, like, to say.
In on this hard? I don't know what I was trying to say, but I'm like, I'm
you
in.
You like it.
I didn't do a bee venom shot. So listen to a previous episode. I started doing bee venom therapy on my knee for pain management. So literally stinging myself with honeybees. I didn't do it for like a week. It was just because it was cold. It was rainy. At one point I went to do it and I checked and like the bees were tucked away in the hive. They weren't coming out and I didn't want to like have to disturb them to get them out. So I didn't do it. Then, you know, work and whatever else. So I went, I think, like 8 days without doing it. And my knee started hurting again.
Wait, I thought you went to your other knee.
I did. No, I never ended up going to my other knee.
Oh, you didn't.
Because we waited so long and I noticed that my injured right, like really bad knee was starting to hurt a little bit again. I went right back to it.
Now, was that pain like, was it just as bad as it had been before?
No, not even close.
Not even close.
If I would have... Let's put it this way. If the amount of pain I was in from taking a week off was the pain I've been in for the last 20 some years, I probably never would have done bee venom therapy because it was still that much better.
That's awesome.
So then I did it again. So I think I've done like 5 treatments on that knee at this point, maybe. And I did it again. And then the next day I keep having that same thought of like, dumb stuff like, man, my shoes are really comfortable today, or like like my man, these socks feel really good. And it's like, it's not the socks, you idiot. It's your knee that's not in pain for the first time in 20 some years. So like, I'm super psyched. But Miss Kara Jo did her first treatment.
Yeah, I did it on my upper back in between my shoulder blades. And you did it for me. And
what did we do? Four. Yeah, four stings.
Which I think we could have done more, but.
Yeah, I think it's smarter to start off.
Yeah.
A little bit less.
And yeah, it felt like somebody lubricated my back. Like it just, like I have a lot of stiffness in my upper back.
I think that, I mean, that's the best way to describe it for my knee too. Just like it's lubed.
Yeah.
It's moving better.
And I didn't, you know, when I get stung by a bee, I'm getting better at it because I'm just getting calmer, but I like yell and curse and throw things when I get stung by a bee in the hive. But the ice really did numb it. Like I could kind of feel it, but it wasn't even close.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just numbing like the skin part of it. You know, it's not numbing anything else. Just that surface level. Like if you're getting your ear pierced, but it really helps. I mean, I barely can even feel it. I've not realized the bee stung me when I did it on my knee before and then looked and like, oh wait, it did sting and pulled it out.
And then pulled
the
bee out,
left the stinger in.
But I stung you the other day in your neck.
Yeah, so I just like randomly one day just like moved my neck in a bad way, and it was one of those like seized up a little bit, and then I about a week of just like kind of constant nagging pain in my neck. So I had Carrot. What'd you do? Five?
Four or five. But I was surprised. There were dying bees in the garage.
Yeah.
They were like in the garage. One was stuck in a spider web. So I grabbed those.
Which, I mean, that's like, that's best case scenario.
Absolutely. And then I was like doing all kinds of weird stuff as I grabbed them and was thanking them. And
Reiki
like,
energy or something. Like,
thank you.
And I've gotten the.
It wasn't as hard for me. Like I just was like so, I did it in such like a gratitude, appreciative, thank you, medicinal way that, and they were dying. So it wasn't as hard for me to sting you as I thought it was going to be.
So it's funny. We put out a little, like a dumb little video. I think they're called Reels on Instagram.
You know exactly what they're called.
It's a real story?
No, I think they're real. Yeah.
I put out one just of like me stinging myself and just kind of the process that I do. And it wasn't by any means scientific. It was just kind of, I don't know, an attention grabber. And it's got like 15,000 views or something crazy right now. But I've had some people come at me a little bit.
Of course.
Which, you know, like I can't really get mad at them. They're coming at me because they're in this place of we need to save the bees, which we're going to talk a lot about today. And like, how dare you selfishly do this? And
I get that.
I totally get it. And then it's funny. People like come back at them. Like, you know, how dare you judge him? And I just let them fight. And I respond with like kind of a over the top kindness that I chuckle about. If anybody knows me,
I thought it was effective what you said.
Oh, I closed the door. That's for sure.
I mean, what did you say?
Something like, finding nature's healing remedies is very complex and it has many layers. And unfortunately, it's hard to get through those layers when you're clouded with judgment.
Yeah, something like that. It was like, you told me, I was like, oh, that was good.
Yeah, it felt good.
Yeah. So that's going well.
So yeah, BVT is continuing. It's going. I'll tell you if I don't think it's working anymore. I'm still skeptical of everything.
I think it's working. Yeah.
So yeah, BVT's also, dude, speaking of bee venom therapy, how bad are ticks this year? It's unreal. It's unreal.
It's disgusting.
Counting today, I've picked 16 ticks off of me since Saturday.
It's so gross.
Shout out Kara Jo Skincare though, because not a single one of them has bitten me.
Yeah.
And I didn't Saturday until the afternoon, but I'm started to put Kara Jo Skincare bug repellent on.
I mean, it really does work. So it's a mosquito and a tick repellent. And everything in it is a bug repellent. So I take soy and avocado oil and I infuse it with different just herbs like rosemary and lemongrass and catnip. And
all these herbs have bug repellent properties. Yeah. It's pretty Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Even the oils.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Andoroba oil I put in there. And then...
Geranium.
Yeah, geranium, citronella, eucalyptus.
Catnip.
You're messing me up. I already said catnip. I infuse it with catnip. I don't put it in catnip essential oil.
No, no, no. We grow the catnip.
Yeah. Just different essential oils. Cedar, thyme. And those are the same oils... that are in like all tick
the natural repellent. Tick stuff. Yeah,
that even they spray in the lawn. So this stuff's yeah, really like good.
Cedar side is a really popular spray.
Thyme oil, thyme whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
But it's really good for your skin. I mean, I use it as my body and face moisturizer. It's good for acne, aging. Like
it's like your best healing skin oil for your skin.
People use it for all kinds of different things.
And like, I like dig the smell of that like citronella kind of geranium thing it's got going on. I kind of like it.
People say they like it. But so many people have messaged me and like, I've never used it as a bug repellent, but it healed a rash on my arm and like my dog. Somebody was like,
my dog. Yeah.
So many people have given me so many different.
Shout out Jen.
Yeah. So yeah, that's been good. But
yeah, so ticks are just like out of control right now. I mean, it is nuts.
So we sprayed the lawn. We spray the lawn.
Yeah, we use this stuff called Tick Kills. It's all natural. There's like cedar and a bunch of those essential oils that I talked about.
Yeah, you get it on Amazon.
Yeah.
It's a concentrate.
Yeah, it's a concentrate. So we buy like an 8 ounce for, it's not cheap. It's like $30 or something.
Yeah, but we get so many uses out of it.
But yeah, it basically... 1 ounce will do our whole yard, like one application, give or take.
Also, even though it's natural, wear a mask because I sprayed it last year in quarantine and I was like, I think I inhaled. Craig was like, he wasn't home. He's like, what? You didn't wear a mask? And I was like, I thought it was natural. He's like, there's like still harsh chemicals doing hail. I was like, oh, okay.
But we noticed in years past, it's amazing. It says it works for a month and like no joke, we would find a tick and go, oh man, I found a tick on me. It's been about how long it's been. It's been like 5 weeks since we applied. Oh yeah. We need to reapply it. And then it would go another month before we'd find a tick. So hopefully that kicks in and works. I'm gonna think I'm going to do it again. It rained pretty hard after the first application. Yeah. So, but anyway, yeah, dude, ticks are just gnarly. But yeah, bee venom, maybe my bee venom treatments with my knee are helping with any tick bites that I don't even know I have.
And they now have like sprays you can spray in your clothes. You can spray all natural things in your bed to keep them out. I think I'm just going to make a spray for us with like that cedar and thyme oil and stuff.
Yeah, the problem is our dogs, even though they're on some type of tick prevention stuff, the ticks still hitch a ride with our dogs and then we find them on us.
So gross.
Yeah, so actually today for the first time I used a lint roller. Yes. Or like a hair remover roller. So our Boston Terrier, he's got, you know, short, fine hair. He went out for his morning leisurely jaunt around our property. And he came back and I did the roller on him for the first time. And whammy, deer tick. Like tiny, tiny little deer tick, which I don't think I would have saw. I usually look at them. I don't think I would have seen it.
Yeah, that's why it's so important. Like your kids... lube them up before they go outside if they're playing outside.
Yeah, our friend. Yeah, we have a couple friends whose kids have gotten Lyme in the last year or so.
So that tick repellent's good. And so, like I put it on my niece and have the kids. People are always like, my kid wouldn't care. Like you just slather your kid up, yeah. and it lasts all day.
It's yeah, there's stuff. Even a little SPF in that thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, ticks, just holy shit.
And you're going to do those toilet paper rolls.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So look up the like natural. It's actually not natural. It's permethrin. It's a pretty aggressive insecticide. However, when dried, it's pretty safe. And what you do is you stuff paper towel rolls or toilet paper rolls with some cotton balls that you soak in it, and you put them around areas that mice will be. Mice are actually what's spreading ticks. People think deer, things like that. It's actually the mice. So you put it in areas that you mice could be running, and what they'll do is they'll take the cotton ball back to their den. They make a nice little cozy bed with it, and then as they're laying, that kills the ticks.
It's not bothering.
Doesn't
them, right?
hurt the mice. Yeah. It's not good for bees. Like you would never want to spray it around anything. But when you spray it on something, you give it a day to dry. It works really well.
You mean you soak the balls and
yeah, you spray the balls.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I guess you could soak them, but you don't need to do it that much. Spraying it works and you let it dry. So I'll report back. We notice any results, but at this year, I mean, it's worse than ever. So we got to just do more.
And people are like, it's not just at our house.
Oh my God. I put it on Instagram. Like, dude, I found so many ticks and just, I probably 10 people within an hour responded with like, dude, every time I walk my dog, I'm getting crushed.
Yeah. It's so gross.
Didn't have the coldest winter once again. I don't think we had those like 9 straight days of freezing or whatever is needed to kill the larva. Swarm season. So we've caught a few swarms.
Yeah. If you want to check them out, go to Mind Your Hives. We have videos of them. Reels.
We're going to like really get into swarms next week. We're going to do a deep dive into the science of swarms and the books we've read about swarms and just like some really cool stuff. I'm excited to talk about it, but there was no way we could include it with this today or else we'd have a 2-hour long podcast. Nobody wants to listen to this for 2 hours, especially me. But yeah, it's swarm season officially. We've been waiting for it and then boom, it hit.
So what are swarms for people that don't know what
swarms are? Yeah, so swarming is the natural way that bees reproduce. So when a bee hive is basically like at capacity, the bees feel that they have taken up as much space as they need to. They go, all right, it's time for us to reproduce and we're going to take the queen and we are going to take about 50, 60% of the bees and the queen and they're going to leave. They're going to leave 40, 50% of the bees and they're going to leave queen cells. So swarm cells, basically they take a fresh egg. They feed it only royal jelly. They make a special cocoon cell.
Cell, and then the bees make the cocoon.
Yeah, yeah. The larva kind of makes the cocoon. But they make a special cell because that queen is so much bigger than a typical drone or worker bee. So it needs a special cell to, you know, grow properly. So basically, they make that. They lay the, you know, the queen lays the egg. The worker bees turn that egg into a queen cell, and then right at about 8-9 days after the egg is laid, they close the cell off. And once they do that, they're gone. They bounce.
So like when you go 60% of the hive leaves.
Yeah, 50, 60%.
So we'll talk more about that next time.
But. So the way we do our own splits. So and that's what we're also doing right now. So when we're going into hives right now, we are checking for swarm cells. We're looking for signs that hive wants to swarm. And when we see those swarm cells, we know, okay, they naturally are trying to reproduce. So let's do it. Let's help them out. So we'll actually take the queen. We'll take 5-10 frames, you know, whatever we feel comfortable with. And we will move those bees to another location, and basically it's kind of like we are imitating what would happen in a swarm.
But we're not losing our bees.
But we're not losing our bees, and we don't have to like fish them out of a tree or you know, climb up a mountain to get them.
Yeah. So and then we're taking them to our new bee yard.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. We started a new outyard. So, about 20 miles from us. Give or take, like 30-minute drive from us, onto some awesome friends of ours. They have a really cool property, and they had space, and it's like this old garden. It's even surrounded by some fencing, and I'm excited. So we've moved 2 hives over there so far, based on what I saw in the hives today, I think in about a week we're going to be putting some more.
Oh yeah, we won't talk about it now, but we didn't even talk about that.
Yeah, nothing like no swarm cells or anything today that I found, but like, I mean, man, we got some hives that are absolutely booming that awesome. I cannot imagine are going to hold off for much longer. So yeah, we're doing splits. We're like doubling our bee catching swarms. We gave splits away. We gave a swarm away that we caught for a friend. I think it just is really good to give.
Yeah, spread the wealth.
Spread the wealth, especially when we're catching swarms and somebody's in need. I'm really happy to give it to them. It hurts because it's so much hard work, and then we would just like watch our hard work of catching that swarm go to somebody else. But it's also powerful when we, you know, it makes us feel good. No such thing as a selfless act, right? But oh, dude, we made So we have some hives that are, I work for a brewery called Forest and Main here in Ambler, Pennsylvania. And we have, we manage some hives that are Forest and Main hives, which we use the honey and we use, it's so cool. We use it for beer. And man, that the beers we made last year with that honey were so good. Just, I'm a little biased, but like, you know,
they're really
on
good.
The real. And it's cool. We're using like foraged yeast for our saisons, and then we're using local honey, and it's just, it's kind of this whole ethos that I really appreciate. But I got introduced to this guy, Keir Hamilton, who is the head brewer of Alewife in New York. And he he had told us beer right now.
What is
Oh yeah, we're drinking
Alewife. Thousand Stars Pilsner. It's really good.
Dude, Thousand Star, this beer is awesome. I'm always like a little worried when I meet somebody and they give me beer and I try it. That first sip is like, please be good. Please be good. Please be good. And it's a Pilsner. So it's like really near and dear to my heart. I just love pills. And this beer is absolutely dynamite. I like really, really like it. I'm not even bullshitting. It's great. But shout out to Keir. He came down also with a friend of ours that owns Plan B.
Which we Farm have their brewery. Beer right here. I'm yeah, ready for crack a beer. That in a minute. So you need to drink yours.
So yeah, our buddy Evan came down with him. They came down from like Hudson Valley area, New York. Plan B is in Poughkeepsie. We love going and visiting that spot.
Yeah, it's great.
It's this beautiful like 25-acre farm, maybe more.
He doesn't know yet, but we're moving in with
him. But they came down and we split the Forest and Main hive and we gave Keir bees and he brought them back up to New York to his place in Hudson Valley. And I think that's just so special. Just seeing the Forest and Main hive grow and be able to split and going up to New York and just love that community of people. So shout out to those guys. That was a super fun day on Sunday hanging out with them and
going in. Yeah, we beekept with them.
Yeah, went into the bee yard and just hung out. Just really, really good people. So yeah, that's happening. Swarms, splits. You know, I'm starting to get the questions about carpenter bees and mason bees. The you know.
Yeah, and so I recently got a couple books, just because I'm trying to learn more about native bees. I don't know that much about native bees, and I'm trying to.
Well, dude, there's 25,000 bees in the world. And there's like 4,000 bees in the U.S. And there's like 500 different bees in Pennsylvania. So you could spend a lifetime before you're going
to
know about
these. Yeah, well, and
these.
I also want to try to just identify what's going on in our property. And Carajo Skincare for the month of April, we've been doing this for the last couple of years. All month long, orders over $50, like plant a tree or a bush. And we did native pollinator friendly trees and bushes. So
we didn't do it last year just
because of quarantine.
Like April.
I wasn't
going to
be like, hey,
like,
everybody, we're in a pandemic, spend $50.
I remember.
Like,
yeah.
Just like everybody just calm down.
But 2 years ago, we did it for the first time.
No, we've done it
two other times. And we had like a handful, six, seven
trees
that we planted this year.
19 trees
so 19 people, and it was really awesome. People were saying, hey, I'd like you to dedicate it to so and so, and
yeah, we plant them in people's names. So yeah. I got these books one because I wanted to learn more about the native bees and just pollinators, and two, I just wanted to learn more about native plants. And so I got these books. I really like them both. The one is, I got them on Amazon, Pollinators of Native Plants by Heather Holm. And then the other one is Bees, an Identification and Native Plant Forage Guide. Oh, they're both by Heather Holm. I didn't even realize.
Shout out Heather Holm.
Yeah, Heather
Holm. We like
you. So in one of them, I put it on my Instagram, Carajo Skincare. So those stalks, those woody stalks from the prior season in the spring, a lot of people,
what is like goldenrod,
all kinds of stuff like echinacea, goldenrod, catnip, St. John's
wort,
coneflower.
So picture that, you know, the stems dry up, they kind of look like little wooden stalks.
Yeah.
But they stay, and a lot of times you rip them up. They're so easy to rip up after the season, but
so if you, I learned this in this book, you break them like a couple inches from the bottom.
Yeah, maybe like 6 inches.
Yeah. And then what happens is when you break them, they're hollow. So bees, native bees, mason bees, all kinds of different bees, will go down and they lay an egg at the bottom of the stalk, and then they pack it with bee bread, which is like pollen, nectar, enzymes, and then they cover it up, and that's their egg.
So that's like when you see these native bee houses, yeah, these solitary bee houses, which is kind of like little shoots of bamboo or something hanging.
Exactly.
That's what it's imitating.
Yes. So you can do it all over your yard. And, you know, people, I get it. I think part of the problem with plants and yards and stuff is people are so consumed by aesthetics, which I understand because there's such pressure and we've just been like conditioned as a society to have lawns without clover and dandelions because of the just propaganda around it.
Don't get me started.
But anyway, the point is you can still do this. And my catnip is already booming.
Oh my God.
Like yeah. The echinacea is already growing so much. Like it covers up these stalks and then you can
probably
give,
like helps some stuff grow too. I mean,
I don't know, but you can give these pollinators, especially mason bees who are like boring into someone hit me up with like picnic tables. What do we do?
So this is the question that I get. This is probably the most common question that we get outside of honeybee questions is what do I do? I've got carpenter bees burrowing into my deck or burrowing into whatever, or I have mason bees that are burrowing into my brick or, you know, into masonry.
And we
over and over again. And I think it's worth mentioning when we're being asked that question, it's always reactive. It's always, what can we do because this is what we're seeing?
And there's not much you can do at that point unless you're going to kill them. Which
The one thing that you can do is you hang a paper bag up.
Oh, right. That's right.
Yeah. So is what I've always said to people. You hang a paper bag up in the corner and it looks like a paper wasp nest. And when mason bees and when carpenter bees see that, they bounce. They get out of that. They get out of Dodge because wasps are their enemy. So you can kind of scare them away. But how about we be more proactive? And guess what? The reason that they're in your deck, the reason that they're burrowing into your habitat is because they don't have their habitat. We've wiped it out. So you need to have rotting wood. You need to have decomposition. In yoga, Kara always talks about, Kara's a yoga teacher too. Shout out, Kara. shout out Ambler Yards every Sunday here in Ambler.
Yeah, you live in Ambler.
10 a.m. on Sundays. Kara does yoga. It's really great outside. But in yoga, Kara always talks about yoga is where effort meets relaxation. So you don't want to overexert yourself. You want to be able to take a deep breath in a pose. And if you can take a deep breath, you're exerting too much energy. I kind of like to think a lot of yard maintenance is a similar thing. Leave the leaves on the ground. Like, you don't need to put so much effort into making your yard look so pristine. Let clover grow. Let dandelions grow. Guess what? Relax a little bit. Let it happen. Like, you don't need to pick up every branch that falls in the woods. Let it happen. Let it decompose. Those areas are so good for these native insects and small rodents. And it's so good for the ecosystem.
And it'll only benefit your gardens and all of those things as time goes by.
I saw this dude. Ugh, fucking Facebook. But I saw this dude. And he was like, check out how perfect my yard is. No weeds. And I look at it like, you're a douchebag. Like, you don't have any dandelions in your perfect green, dumb desert. I think I've said green desert for lawn in every podcast. But I look at it and just think you're an egotistical jerk that has a problem with a beautiful little yellow flower. And instead, you're going to plant grass, which helps nothing at all. So don't make me go down that road anymore. But it just really bothers me if people think they're doing the right thing, but they're doing it for egotistical reasons without thinking about nature at all.
Yeah, I think that you're being a little harsh. I mean,
I'm always going to be a little harsh when it comes to this stuff.
Like, people don't know. That's why we're talking about it right now. And our society, like I said earlier, has conditioned us to...
It's willful ignorance, if you ask me. At this point, if you don't realize that you shouldn't be spraying Roundup and killing dandelions on your yard, you have blinders on. You're willfully being ignorant. And guess what? If you're hearing this and it's bothering you, the next time you do it, you're really being an asshole, because at least somebody's telling you now that you should stop doing it.
All right, you need to take a couple breaths.
I also had some guy tell me that Roundup is good. Oh, I was like, here's a study that was published a month ago showing that Roundup kills bumblebees, like point blank. And he's like, nope, that study's wrong. I'm like, yeah, right. I bet like an international study with Cornell Dice Lab is wrong.
I think you should take us a beer.
Shout out Alewife. This beer's awesome.
Mm, I'm drinking this cherry beer.
So yeah, prevention. So hey, if you had problems with mason bees, you had problems with carpenter bees in the past, hang up a brown paper bag or a paper bag in the corner of that of your porch or patio or whatever. Maybe it'll help. But look around a little bit. Maybe you should get some of those bee houses. Kara gets them on Etsy. They're beautiful.
Yeah. And some people have bee houses and they still burrow. And I think it really comes down to, and what we want to talk about the rest of the time, is plants and providing the right plants for pollinators and not just honeybees.
So here's the thing. Honeybees are not native. Honeybees are imported from Europe. They came here in the 1600s, give or take, 1700s.
I don't know.
But they're not native to the U.S. They're not defined as invasive, but I don't know. Maybe when we talk about it a little bit, maybe you can call them a little bit invasive.
Yeah, now
maybe
the,
a lot of bit invasive.
The more
but
we're learning.
Here's the deal.
This is kind of depressing.
When we talk about saving the bees, we're not talking about saving honeybees. We're talking about saving the 3,999 other bees out there that are native bees. Or
the wild bees.
Yeah. I mean, in the U.S., the 4,000 native bees. Here in Pennsylvania, the 500 native bees. So we're talking about saving those bees, saving those pollinators. And Kara, what's the best way to do it?
Best way to do it is plant native species. So the reason is, so you can have native plants and animals and insects, and then you can have non-native plants, animals, insects, and then you can have invasive. So non-native means that they either have a neutral or can even have a positive, they're not from here, but they can have a neutral or positive effect on the ecosystem. Invasive means that they're having a negative effect on the ecosystem. So some cool things about native plant or invasive plants are a lot of them are medicinal. Cleavers, if you're out in your yard right now.
I feel like you're constantly like, Greg, did you know that this plant that's growing everywhere is an herb?
Yeah.
And then you tell me like, yeah, let's make tea out of it and blah, 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 blah. It's nuts.
So cleavers is this plant that I didn't realize was an herb until I didn't know that it was cleavers. It's just like this sticky, it feels like Velcro. It's so easy to rip out of the ground. And it was destroying my goldenrod last year. So I like pulled it all up, cleared it all out. And then I follow all these herbalists and someone was like, I'm making cleaver tea. And I was like, what the heck are cleavers? I'm like, oh my God, this is cleavers. It's cooling. It's moistening. It's great for, like summertime tea. My chickens, I've been pulling it up and giving my chickens bushels of it. So a lot of invasives.
I'm sorry, bushels?
Yeah, isn't that?
Bushels?
Yeah, what's a bushel?
Like a whole shit ton.
I've been giving them. A bushel? A bushel.
I want to Google what a bushel is right now. Google it's hilarious. It.
I think I'm probably right.
By the way, this beer you just cracked, Plan B...
It's their barn beer with cherries.
Yeah.
Don't ask me how to pronounce it.
Carnet.
It's so good.
Barn beer with cherries, 100% New York ingredient wild ale aged in oak on New York grown tart cherry. This beer is so good.
Yeah, it's so good. So
this beer is going to put me in a better mood.
Yeah, a lot of, I don't know, this conversation is a little bit depressing, but it's hopeful. We can do things. We do have control. So pulling up invasives, a lot of invasives, do have medicinal properties. So, you know, you can pull them up and use them. But planting native plants is so important beyond pollinators, even for the plants, the birds.
Birds are pollinators. Birds.
I know, but people don't think of birds as pollinators.
That's why I'm saying it. Birds absolutely are pollinators. Yes. When we talk about pollinators, we're not just talking about insects. We're totally talking about small birds as well.
So native pollinators have evolved along with native plants.
Oh, this is cool. This was when I learned this recently. This is really interesting to me.
So they know what plants to go to. It's been passed down. It's like their
biologically ingrained in their DNA. They grew alongside certain plants. So those are the plants that they forage from.
So even if you plant a plant that's not native that could help them, they don't even know to go to those plants because it's not part of their, you know, not part of their evolution. So native plants are so important for so many reasons.
Out of pollinators, 90% of them are considered specialists.
What does that mean?
So 90% of pollinators, they are specialists, meaning they only go to certain plants, those same plants that they evolved with. So like Kara just said, if you put something else that may be very nutritious and really great, they don't even know. It's not in their realm of understanding that they are going to get nutrients from it. 10% are generalists. Honeybees are a generalist. They will go to many plants. They'll check out new stuff. But you know what that means? That also means that they are going to pollinate and spread invasive species. So something like Japanese knotweed, which is in the bamboo family, it's actually really great for honeybees. But there's not many native bees or native pollinators that are going to touch Japanese knotweed because they just, again, they're specialists. They don't know about it.
Plus, Japanese knotweed is choking out other native plants and not allowing them to grow. So it's just this whole kind of...
So this is why when you want to help pollinators, when you say you want to save the bees, plant native trees, plant native flowers. You don't necessarily need to save honeybees. Now,
and the reason for that is because honeybees are, while they're having all kinds of issues, they are, what do we want to call it? Like
managed, like livestock
managed.
More.
They're managed pollinators. And then.
And they're doing, I mean, they do a wonderful job. And they're making up some of the slack that's happening because as we see a 40% decline in the bee population every year, honeybees can pick up some of that slack because we can manage honeybees. There's not a ton of species of bees that can be managed.
I kept saying to Greg, well, what can we do? Can we keep other kinds of bees? He was like, no, Kara.
but we have the solitary bee houses. We provide an ecosystem that is, we plant native species. We're doing the things that we need to be doing. And then, of course, we're managing a reasonable amount of colonies of honeybees.
And don't get me wrong. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I have made mistakes and planted invasive species. And now this summer, I'm really going to work on digging them up. I mean, I've been working on it. And a lot of plants are just naturally like multiflora rose with those.
Oh my goodness.
Those thorns.
It's such a great name though. Makes you think it's good.
And they're pretty.
Yeah,
and they're
totally smell nice.
But you know, a lot of times they grow just in the wild. They're just pervasive. But a lot of people are planting invasive species without even realizing it. And it is having a serious impact because this is a complicated, complex problem.
And here's the deal too. We're talking about honeybees possibly negatively affecting some other pollinators, but guess who the number one species that is affecting pollinators and is affecting our ecosystem? It's humans.
Yeah.
We're making horrible decisions. We're putting plastic in our water. We're just chemicalizing everything, toxic chemicalizing everything. So where the problem here? And you know what? All right. So it's kind of a debate right now. There's been some articles published recently that kind of said like, hey, people are getting a little out of control with honeybees. And I don't disagree. I've said it on this before. I'll say it again. I'll say it to every beginner that asks me about beekeeping. We do not need more beekeepers. We need better beekeepers. And here's why. And shout out again to Montgomery County Beekeepers Association. Scott McArt, Dr. Scott McArt from the McArt Lab at Cornell that runs alongside the Dice Bee Lab at Cornell. Amazing, amazing work these folks are doing. He presented two months ago at our Beekeepers Association meeting. And he talked about these problems that are occurring with honeybees passing on parasites and nasty pathogens to native species of pollinators. And there's some pretty compelling numbers that came out of it. So I went back and I checked my notes and I rewatched his presentation. And I remember this stuck out at me and it's compelling. So this is all studies done. 63% of flowers that were visited by honeybees have honeybee parasites on them. Mm. Yeah. 78% of wild bees that visit those same flowers are found to have honeybee parasites. Now they can have some of these parasites on their own. They're not just like totally specific to honeybees, but the parasites that honeybees have are being transmitted to wild bees.
Which starts becoming like, are they invasive? Are they having a negative impact?
But here's also what they found is that the varroa mite, varroa destructor, like the bane of beekeepers' existence, that is, they're weakening immune systems and they're passing pathogen or they're passing parasites on, and they're affecting these bees and they're causing these bees to be sick. So it's kind of the reason that I think you do need to treat your honeybees. Or,
well, Scott McArk even said that.
Yeah. Or, and I think like the science community is pretty bullish on treating for varroa. But there is a segment of natural beekeepers, and honestly, I don't have a problem with most of them. I think they are doing what they feel is best by not treating, thinking they're creating a stronger bee that can fight the parasites themselves. But like Dr. Tom Seeley kind of talks about is, you still need to monitor your mite loads. You still need to monitor these, you know, parasitic properties that these bees can have. And if you have bees that are having huge mite loads, those bees are spreading those parasites to these native insects. So you need to take care of it. So you don't necessarily need to treat, and you can go that route, in my opinion. But I don't think it's right to just let your bees go completely natural, because guess what? They're not natural in our environment. So you really can't treat them entirely like they're natural. You kind of have to treat them like they're managed livestock.
And the more research that's coming out showing that this is causing a problem, we can't turn away from it. It's hard to hear. It's upsetting to hear. And
now there's a lot of, in these studies, there's a lot of kind of gray area. So three reports that I read, one said 53% of the results showed that there are negative effects happening with honeybees versus wild bees. That same study said 28% were no effects and 19% it was completely mixed. Not compelling numbers, but still, hey, 50% saying there were negative effects. Another study that they ran side by side, 30% had negative, 30% were straight up positive, and then the rest was mixed. So you're looking at 40% totally mixed results. But all of the studies showed that there's high transmission rates of negative pathogen transmission coming from honeybees.
Yeah, that's what I'm, so it's hard to hear these things. It's upsetting to hear these things. But I mean, like you said,
We're beekeepers doesn't mean that we're just like turning a blind eye saying right. the honeybees are the greatest thing ever. No, they need to be treated a certain way, just like everything needs to be treated a certain way.
It's all very complex.
Now, I do love that a lot of these studies, every single one of them, I think, even says, there are very positive results coming from beekeepers because beekeepers are very in tune with nature. They are in tune to planting pollinator-friendly plants. They're in tune to doing better for the environment than a non-beekeeper. And I really do appreciate that because we talked about it in episode one. How'd we get here? We talked about how this beekeeping has opened our eyes to all of this. At least me. I didn't know jack shit about this stuff. And now, like, I can't get enough. I just want to read and read and read and learn more and more and more.
There's so much to learn. So wait, let me tell you about what I just learned in this book.
Which book?
So it's the Bees and Identification of Native Plant Forage Guide. So there's this cuckoo bee, right?
Cuckoo. And
the cuckoo bee doesn't have a nest of its own.
Doesn't have a cuckoo's nest?
Mm-mm, doesn't have one.
Flies right over it?
And so what it does is it will stalk these leafcutter bees who do have nests. And a lot of times they'll stalk them like in plain sight. They'll like sit out and they'll watch and then they can be seen. And as soon as the leafcutter bee leaves its nest, the cuckoo bee will fly in and she will lay her eggs in the leafcutter bee's like brood chamber. And then the leafcutter bee just takes care of the brood like it was her own.
There's a bird that does that. It'll lay an egg in a different nest and bounce. And when the mama bird comes back, it just treats this new egg like it's one of their own.
Brilliant.
And they raise it. That's so great. Funny you say that, though. We talk about how our honeybees don't necessarily forage super close to their hives. And the reason they don't do it is because honeybees don't want competition following them home.
So let's talk about like some things that we can plant.
Well, hey, we bought how many?
18.
So we bought 18
button bushes.
So we're high on button bushes. We live in a very wet area. We kind of like wetland environment. So we did a ton of research on what we wanted to plant. And we looked at planting by season. Specifically, I'm talking spring through fall, but you know, early spring is a very important time, and early to late fall is a very important time.
So this first came up because we were listening
specifically for pollinators.
We were listening to another beekeeping podcast. It's called Beekeeping at Five Apple Farm.
Oh yeah, with that guy with the.
So the she tree, had a the guest tree guy. On.
He was awesome.
So. We hadn't heard this and it's so logical. I don't know why we never thought of it before, but so there's the dearth. So there's the flow when there's nectar flow and it's coming in and it's not.
So like
issue.
We just right now are hitting a flow. When you start seeing all the dandelions popping, it's like the spring flow is coming in and we're watching it happen right now.
And then there's the dearth, which is there's not a lot of
July.
Plants.
It's super hot. The plants are holding onto their nectar. There's not a ton of plants that are willing to just like give up resources during that time because there's not a lot of water. There's way more heat.
Well, and also I just learned this. So evolutionarily speaking, pollinators have evolved with plants have evolved with pollinators and plants want pollinators to come to them so that they can get pollinated and they can grow and proliferate. So
wait, so plants are making like a conscious decision to like,
this is what I just learned. Vince. Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course they're making conscious decisions. You know, plants make conscious decisions.
Yeah, I do.
So when during the flow, there's a lot of plants and the plants give their nectar freely because it's like a trade-off, like, hey, bee, come here. I'll give you lots of nectar, and then you'll pollinate for me. Because there's a lot of plant competition.
It's like going to the food court at the mall and like the Chinese food court restaurants. Like, yo, come get some sesame chicken. You want to try the sample?
Exactly,
you want to try
the samples?
And then I'm like, ah, this is delightful.
Yeah.
Sorry, hot dog guy.
So, yeah, there's
hot
so
dog
many.
Guy?
Ew, I don't know I don't about know that. Either. I don't know if I've ever eaten a hot dog
Sorry,
at the mall.
Sbarro.
Sbarro's was good.
It was.
So there's a lot of competition. So the plants give their nectar freely, but during the dearth, which is the middle of the summer, like Greg said, when it's hot, there is less competition and they don't have to give up their nectar as much. They can hold on to
so
it.
So they don't need to whore themselves out? They don't need to like spread their legs for every bee?
Wow. That was an aggressive analogy.
I think I nailed it.
Okay.
Sorry, whatever. I'm stuck on opening a hot dog restaurant food court right
Moving
now.
Moving on from that. So the whole idea behind this one podcast where this guy came in was talking about we need to plant like a pollinator, like flowering plants during the dearth, which is just like July and August.
And I thought this was interesting too. This dude was from North Carolina, like in the mountains, I think. A little more of like an Appalachian region of North Carolina. And everything he talked about, he was like, yeah, you know, this is good for like up to Virginia. But I'm reading studies about how our climate is getting closer and closer to the climate of Virginia. We're like, we've moved like 100, 150 miles, a little warmer, a little wetter, like Virginia. So when he was talking, I'm going like, man, these are the plants that I need to worry about and we need to plant now. Because in 5, 10, 15 years, when they're really peaking and you have a beautiful, you know, 30-foot tree, where are we going to be?
And it's all about planting. Did you turn me down a lot? I feel like I can barely hear myself anymore.
Go ahead. You were just a little, you were peaking getting, a little loud.
I was
loud.
Getting real excited earlier. Yeah,
I'm all right with that.
Probably when you're talking about those weird sexual innuendos that are making me feel uncomfortable.
Plants pouring themselves out.
Okay, we don't have to get back to it.
So, oh, spreading their legs. That was the, too much.
I just got distracted. Okay.
Man.
Well, because I was going to say in real life, not on a podcast, that would be right up my alley. But right now I'm trying to like police this thing. Okay. So trees are what you really want to plant. Yes, wildflowers are good. Flowering plants are good. But bushes and trees give so many more flowers.
Oh, I wish I remembered. And I don't know if it was him, but I've read stats about like one linden tree is the equivalent of like X number of acres of clover.
Yeah, think about a huge tree.
Like, and a buddy texted me about his cherry tree a couple weeks ago when it was popping. He was like, dude, this thing is at 60 megahertz right now. It's just humming from bees visiting it. And that was like right when spring was hitting off, where there were only a few plants that were flowering. That, you know, cherry blossoms are one of those early ones. But I thought that was so cool that he could literally feel and hear the humming of bees just crushing his tree in a good way.
Yeah. And so, and we don't need to get into this, but like the amount of nectar that trees are putting out as the climate changes is less. So planting more is better. So I just wanted to run down a couple different trees, bushes, and wildflowers that you could plant.
And again, we're talking about Pennsylvania,
because
you know we're worldwide right now. Somebody in Luxembourg is listening to us weekly, apparently.
And so these
shout out that dude or female in Luxembourg.
So these are.
I didn't know Luxembourg was actually a place, by the way. I thought it was like a made up place.
Stop it! That's ridiculous.
I have no clue where it is.
So the books that I mentioned earlier have really good resources for plants to plant. And then Garden Plants for Honeybees by Peter Lintner. He came to our Beekeepers Association meeting. We heard him speak. He was amazing.
Oh, Peter Lintner was awesome. Rest in power, King.
Yeah.
He was the man.
His book is amazing. What he did is he did a lot of research at DuPont at
Longwood Gardens.
Yeah, Longwood Gardens. And they have a lot of invasive species. So his book goes month by month what to plant, and I use it as a resource, especially
it goes month by month what is blooming. So it starts in February, ends in I think October.
I think it goes all the way to November.
I know it's not January and it's not December, but it goes month by month with what is blooming, and then it says he gives a rating of I think 1 to 5 or 1 to 4 stars on pollen and nectar output.
It's October. Yeah, so this has been an awesome resource, it tells where the plant's from, so you can tell if it's native to North, like North America, South America, whatever. So I use this, and this was my main source. Because I have to tell you, like, I take classes, I talk to beekeepers. A lot of beekeepers are planting a lot of invasive species.
Because some of some of them are really great for honeybees.
I understand.
We talk about Japanese knotweed, but you gotta go deeper than honeybee. You have to think of pollinators as a whole.
Right.
And guess what?
And
honeybees are benefiting from native plants.
And beyond, we have to go.
But native bees are not benefiting from these invasive plants.
And we have to go beyond pollinators. We need to think about the other plants and the soil and all kinds of stuff. So, trees. Some good trees to plant. And I'm only talking about things that bloom in July and August.
Because that is typically the dearth.
That is the dearth. So that is when...
when resources are needed.
Yes. So cottonwood actually blooms in early spring. So I just lied on that one.
So early spring is another, when coming out of winter, pollinators, they need resources. So early spring and dearth are really, really great.
So that likes moist soil. Sourwood, which I wish we could plant, but it's well drained soil, sunny spot. The Ben Franklin tree is also likes well drained soil, and sumac, which is not poison sumac. They have like these red cone cluster flowers. I don't know if that's necessarily the name of them, but
yeah, like red cones.
Yeah, red cones. Yeah. And they're like clustered. So
for beekeepers listening, if you have any sumac trees around you, pick off those buds right as they're dying and dry them. And they make wonderful smoker fuel for your smoker for your bees.
So those are some good ones. And I'm talking about specific months here. Bushes. We're planting buttonbush all over our property. Senna.
Senna with an S?
An S.
S-E-N-N-A.
S-E-N-N-A. Ironweed is really good for a moist climate. Culver's root is good for medium to wet. So those are just some ideas of some things to plant, bushes and trees, which are ideal. But then if you're looking into plant some wildflowers again, early spring, crocus is like one of the first things
crocus
that come out. They like partial to full sun, well drained. Clover, again, we don't even need to plant clover. Just let it grow.
But you don't need to throw grass seed down. Throw clover seed down.
Yeah, throw clover. And then if you do cut it, I mean, it looks like green.
You know, that's
anyway.
A good thing to mention. Cutting our lawns right now, anybody that's mowing their lawn, raise your mower up. Let it be a little higher. Let it skip over some of the flowers. Just raise it up a little bit.
Sunflowers, obviously, who doesn't love sunflowers? They need full sun. Pretty self-explanatory. Jopie weed. Pollinators love jopie weed. We have some jopie weed that grows if the deer don't eat it. And there are so many different pollinators on that. Jopie weed it's pretty tolerant. It likes wet. Mountain mint is a different, it's not just regular mint. It's pretty tolerant of whatever. Fireweed's tolerant. Black-eyed Susan, people love black-eyed Susan. It's
shout
pretty
out
tolerant.
Maryland, state flower Maryland.
Echinacea is also herbal tolerant. Catnip is invasive. It does keep away bugs. It is medicinal. You can actually even smoke catnip and it's like calms you down. Bee balm is so beautiful, and honeybees don't even really, I never
no,
see our
like,
honeybees.
Yeah. Bumblebees.
Yeah. The only thing is we live in a really wet climate, and I wish I never planted bee balm cause it gets, powdery mildew, and then that can spread to other things. And now I can't get rid of the bee balm, but bee balm's great. Milkweed.
Oh, milkweed. Yeah. Monarchs.
And there's all different
milkweed
kinds of
helps
milkweed.
Fight spotted lantern fly. Shout out our buddy, Alan. Yeah, milkweed is really, really great to plant.
Aster comes in the fall when there's not a lot of stuff growing.
Aster
goldenrod.
Aster and goldenrod.
And they're so beautiful. Anise hyssop is really tolerant, and the pollinators love it. And my favorite is Creeping Virginia. I've been pulling this thing up for years.
Like, Creep Virginia.
It looks like a cross between poison ivy and marijuana. Like it's a five...
Well, that sounds like the bane of my existence and the opposite of the bane of my existence.
And I didn't realize, one, it's native.
The love of my
life. To here. And two, I guess it flowers. I just keep pulling it up, so I don't even know that it flowers.
We make mistakes a lot.
So I'm excited to just let that go. It is a vine, so it can, you know, you have to make sure it's not just like choking out trees and different kinds of things and like climbing up your house and messing stuff up. But really, there's so many good books out there.
I think the biggest thing to take away from this, I mean, hey, listen back and plant what Kara's talking about, but do the research. Don't just go to Home Depot and buy a plant. By the way, don't buy any of their plants, but don't just go somewhere and be like, that looks nice. Excuse me. That looks nice. Let me buy it. No, do a little research. Just Google, is it native to Pennsylvania? Is it good for pollinators? You know, do a little bit. I don't want to go down an angry hole too much, but remember when Honey Nut Cheerios was like doing a whole including a pollinator seed plant packet?
Yeah, Save the Bees.
Their Save the Bees campaign. Oh man, I probably pissed off so many people because guess what? If you did the tiniest, I mean just the intern, assistant intern Googling of the seeds that they were including in this packet, they were all GMO invasive non-native seeds. It was total bullshit. They put no effort into actually trying to help the environment. And it was totally that we look good because we put bees on this and save the bees. And then guess what? People caught on to them and they had to issue an apology. And then they were like, oh, I'll donate a bunch of money to somebody. And they shrugged it off. But guess what? Do a little bit of research.
Well, and also if you don't feel like doing research, there's great places around here that you can go. These people are knowledgeable. Redbud Native in Media. I've been there. She only sells native plants. You can go, you can talk to her. I mean, she knows way more than I do. But look into that kind of stuff and you can just show up and say
native nurseries around.
Yeah. Here. Native nursery. Just Google it. Native nurseries in your area. If you're not around here, and those people, you know, they know so much. So
yeah, don't be afraid to ask questions. Like I'm definitely guilty of that all the time where I go in and I like want to pretend like I know what I'm talking about. Well, guess what? I don't know anything.
All right. I have something to leave us on.
All right, cool.
Okay. Shout out to Steve Wilde.
Oh, love Steve Wilde.
Because he came over and he showed me the app of a lifetime that has totally changed my life. And everywhere I go, I'm like, do you guys know about this app?
Can I just tell you, Steve Wilde, his son, is going to do something really great in beekeeping when he's older. He just has this kid just has this vibe. He came over, he kept us. And I was like, hey, do you want to hold a bee? And he's just like, yep, sure do. So I grabbed a drone and I put it. This kid walked around with his drone in his hands for like 10, 20 minutes, just talking to it. Oh, well, it like melted my heart.
He watched a bee emerge and he was like, you can do it. He was like sitting there watching the bee emerge. And sometimes it takes like 20 minutes for the bee to get out. And he was like, you got it. And he kept rooting this bee on. So
good job to Steve and his wife for raising a kid that just like cares Wolfie. About the environment. And I mean, if we could all just do a little bit of, just like a little bit of that with our kids, that would be awesome.
Okay. So Seek is the app.
S-E-E-K.
Yes. It's a free app. It's put out by the California Academy of Sciences and National Geographic Society. So all you do is it turns into like a camera and you just, all you have to do is hover over the plant or the insect or the bird or your dog.
I mean, literally you can look up with your iPhone at a bird that's on a telephone wire and it'll give you like, if it doesn't nail it, it'll give you like two or three options of what it might be. Like, I mean, the other day I did it, I mean, nowhere near. And it said either crow or raven.
Yeah. When we were in Florida, we were finding all different kinds of birds and it was a mockingbird. And I'm like, how do you even know that? So you can walk around. The
bird
around.
Was like, how do you even know that? Seek ID, shout out the Wildies.
Yeah, so you can go around your yard and you can find out what's invasive, what's not, and you can learn about the plants and you can learn about the bugs. Bugs aren't scary. Stop being scared of them.
Heard that.
Yeah, it's life changing.
Well, thank you so much for listening. A little longer of an episode. And just following up again, anybody with like a super green lawn with no dandelions, if you want to come over and have a conversation, I'm willing to, you know, talk it out.
All right.
Holler away. We appreciate you listening. If you got this far, you're absolutely our favorite and you're a total rock star. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Hit us with some topics. Hit us with some questions. We're going to talk about swarms next time. So be on the lookout. I'm Greg.
I'm Cara Jo.
Thanks again for listening. Cheers, y'all.
Bye.